Lecture 12, Physical Use of Stem Cells. This is Santa's Gift Program to Me seminar, How I Train My Genie Stem Cells. Okay. Physical use of stem cells, once thought only to come from the brain. The concept stem cell is universal both in the body and the allness. Using many stem cells was once considered valuable. A new concept now is that single cells use is the most effective. As an atom, so a single cell, so tiny yet so precious, so cautiously yet so lovingly utilized. When I was in Prague, Czechoslovakia, I had the privilege of hearing and seeing some of the alchemists at work in their program. It was kind of fascinating. And the things that they did were evident that there was an awareness that they had that anyone can have and doesn't choose to follow. Now, why we don't choose to follow this awareness is kind of interesting. We read about Mandrake, the magician. We read about many other great mystical type people out of history, and we think it's all just a fantasy. And then we see people like our friend who is the great magician, what's his name?
David
Copperfield. And he does many wonderful things. Now, does he do, in fact, really some very creative, imaginative things that are not just magic, that are not just ledger domain, sleight of hand? Yes, he does. And he doesn't act too much upon it. Now, would you say that walking on fire was quite magical, really? And we understand the philosophy of it, but the thing is, people do it who don't understand the philosophy of it. They just do it because they're told they can do it, and they believe it, and they do it. And they see other people do it, so they do it. People lay on bed of nails and all these other things, and they are just told they can do it, and they do it. And we feel that so strange. And people stick fire inside of themselves, you know. And they blow out this fire torch and stuff, and you say, well, they're greased or whatever. Well, however, that is something. I'm sure they don't have any hair in their nose. Oh, well, singed out. But think about it. These are some pretty spectacular things that we're talking about here. Some pretty amazing things. And what we want to do is to realize that we have the ability to utilize these stem cells. I'm sure later we'll find out that they're not really stem cells. We'll find out that they're energy bubbles. We'll find out that they're not substance at all, but pure energy. And that this pure energy is directed by our thought into whatever we want it to be. And what is an atom? An atom is a very tiny substance, and it has so much energy in it that it could light a whole city for, you know, a year or better. One atom. We say, well, they need more atoms than that to do that. Yeah, that's because they haven't perfected it. They haven't perfected it. Well, what do they do when they end up with the utilization of an atom in an atom burning device that makes electricity? What do? They have rods. And what are these rods? What's on these rods? They're radioactive. They are filled with atoms. They're filled with virtually most of the essence of the atom, the power of the atom. And so we're only using one tiny portion of any atom that we are using. And the rest of it is going into this radioactive rod that is then buried in the ocean or the sea, which is kind of an interesting thing to do. I'm sure within a very short time they'll figure out a way to deactivate the radioactive rod. Because to leave a radioactive rod existing is like leaving a bomb ready to go off, you know. When it is joined with the right essence or substance or mineral or vegetable or something that is going to turn it on, wow, things are going to really happen. What then is the rod called?
What is a rod?
A rod is a rod, like a stick like this here, but it's metal. And the atom is somewhere in its vicinity, and it is put into the reactor. You got to understand all that funny stuff. It's put into the reactor, where in the reactor reacts and takes power from the atom and puts it into other devices to give electricity to the cities. You follow me? I know it's a complex thing. If the less you understand about it, the better. Not because you shouldn't know it, but because it's just a limited step along the way.
Yeah.
We're going to outpass that rod in no time at all, because science is not standing still. It is constantly looking for new avenues of expression. And what happened during the Second World War? What happened up in Norway? What did Norway have that Germany wanted? You know what they wanted? They wanted Norway's heavy water. And you say, how can water be heavy? Well, there's a chemical formula in there, but it's heavy water that came out of the ground. It was coming out of some source, like a volcanic outlet or something, in Norway yet. And the Germans went in and took over Norway and took over the source. And they made from that their their jets, their buzz bombs, you know, these things that they had during the war. And they used the energy from the liquid heavy water for that. Can you see how much information you must have of all these things all over? And thank you, Rex. I mean, thank you, Ellen. Energy from all over is used in many different ways. It's really fantastic. Now, Ellen, I would suggest that since you know the intelligence of Rex, you teach him how to open and close doors.
By himself.
Oh, by himself, yes. Because, and then, if necessary, give him a key. Because we got to keep him available to in and out, you know. Rex, turn around now and sit down. Sit down. Thank you. Good boy. Yeah, he is quite a guy, quite an educator. He went to Harvard and Yale, and he went to Oxford, Cambridge, and he sat on all of them. I had books from those places, and he loved to sit on them and, you know, just feel the good vibrations. Now, so these are things that are happening now. These are things that are taking place. And more, I was taking you back in history. When we go back to the pyramid and see how it's constructed, at that time there was no physical vehicle that was able to manipulate those stone. No way. And in fact, it was even less likely then than it is today. And today, we have not the magic to handle some of those stones. They are so humongous, so tremendous. Now, what did handle them? Thought. Thought handled them. How did thought handle them? How did thought bring those things into being? Well, by our... Yeah, Ellen wants to say the click of her finger. Well, Ellen, you probably were there doing that. But this is what it's all about. Now, we read about the Atlanteans, and we want to poo-poo them. We want to say they aren't so. But little evidences are showing up here and there around the world, underwater, that the Atlanteans perhaps were actually here. That there perhaps were these generations of the Mu and Lemur, and Atlantis and what have you. They're quite possible. Now, What are we finding out about the other planets that are surrounding us? The other planets have energy on them. And we send our rockets to the moon and other planets. And they're doing research. Now, answer me this question in the wisdom that you have. How could the Hubble telescope and the Hubble rocket, what do they call it?
Telescope.
Hmm?
The Hubble telescope.
But there is a rocket that went up and it was doing research. And it was part of the Hubble project. And it went up many years ago. And it had batteries in it that were created many years ago. Not as good as the ones we got now. And it operated from out of there, out of space, with the batteries that it had then, sending back color photographs of what it saw and information on what it saw. We don't know half of what they send back, but, and believe it or not, it's still sending back information. And it's still flying around out there in outer space. Flying around whatever planet it's flying around. It's amazing. It's amazing. Now, is it perhaps that the atmosphere in outer space extended the life of the battery because it made less demand on it? It had no earthly gravity or other things that were pulling upon it? Or is there an energy source in outer space that is feeding the batteries and encouraging them to stay alive and send back signals to us of information, which are quite real? Now, you see, let your mind float once. Let your mind go into all the possibilities, and you say to yourself, my God, you know, wow, ooh-wee, isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. It's very exciting. But think about it. Think about it. Those are things that are happening right now in your world and mine, in where we are. But now, I told you about the Ark of the Covenant. Remember? The Ark of the Covenant is the Jewish box that the priests made to carry the Ten Commandments and other holy documents and papers for the Hebrews. And the Ark of the Covenant was designed by designers at that time, whether it was a priest or specialized people, to be a giant battery. It is a giant, giant battery. But yet, it is made of materials that theoretically wouldn't be thought to be battery-creating materials. And anyone who reaches inside of there and doesn't know how to handle it instantly is shocked. And because they're shocked, they usually die. Not because the power is so great, but they're so surprised. And where does it get the energy? Where does it get the continuing energy that it has? It has no plug-in to 110, 220 current. It has no plug-in to any battery charger. But it is carried by the special people, the Enochs of the Hebrew tabernacles and the rabbis, to be taken from place to place. Well, now, it did exist for many, many, many years, and it probably still exists somewhere. But we only have written knowledge about it in the Bible, describing how it was constructed, what size it is, and what power it had, and the things like that. Now, you know, how did they create such a thing? Out of the mind. How did they carry out such a thing? Out of the mind. How did they do the Ten Commandments? Out of the mind. How did Moses go up on the mountain and bring down Ten Commandments? Out of the mind. He didn't have a chisel. He didn't have any equipment with him. He went up there with just his robe and just to talk to God. Well, God was him, of course. But then he brought back the Ten Commandments, which may have been made by his divine creativity or whatever. And then when he came down, he threw it down, and the people were not acting the way he wanted them to. And he went back up and he wrote the negative Ten Commandments, which is kind of silly. But that's the way it is. Now, where does this energy come from to create the Ten Commandments? The energy that comes from the Ark of the Covenant. The energy that came from, if indeed the story is true of Moses and turning the rivers and the waters of all of Egypt to blood so that the Pharaoh would have to release him. Sending the angel of death over the city and wherever the blood cross or whatever it was on the door, the angel of death passed that house by. And thousands of families of the Egyptians were killed, were destroyed. You see, that's an energy, that's a power. I would say not necessarily too well used, but it's an energy. And how did he separate the Red Sea so that his people could walk through? Must have been awfully muddy. Must have been awfully muddy. Why should it be muddy? If he can separate the sea, he can also have a stairway of gold going down there, you know? Why not? Why not? You see, we always want to make it logical and reasonable. And anything concerning the divine is not logical or reasonable. Because logic and reason are based upon human presumptions, are based upon human attitudes and human ways of thinking of things. Now, when I was talking with these people, these alchemists, they were telling me all sorts of wonderful things. And I said to them, why don't you go out and present this to the world? And he said something that I always remember. He said, I am doing this for myself. I have no obligation to the universe except to be myself and have fun. I'm not here to change the world or to improve the world or to do anything or to hurt the world, just to be myself and have fun. And I said, well, that's kind of selfish, isn't it? And he said, no. I am not created for any other reason except to be myself and have fun. That's why I use that phrase so strongly. But it's true. It's true. We are not created to be our brother's keeper. We're not created to run the world. We're created just to enjoy our own world and be who we are. That's all that matters. Now, little by little, you have wisdom given to you. Little by little, you have knowledge given to you. Knowledge that you can use to bless yourself and to bless your world and to bless your existence, you know. Knowledge of, where did the old wives get these information about these herbs to use and about certain foods to eat and certain foods not to eat? And where did the aspirin come from? Anyone know?
Yeah, from the bark of the birch tree.
Of the which tree?
Birch.
Birch tree. It's a tree like the birch tree.
Or
yeah.
The willow tree.
Huh?
Or it could be the willow tree.
Yeah. So, good thing she's not running the pharmacy. But anyhow, it is from the bark of a tree that was common to the Indians and common to the people who were the pioneers of the country. It was probably a willow tree that was everywhere. Ubiquitous, you know, just everywhere. And so, it allowed people to take this bark and suck on it, and their headache would go away, their pain would go away. All of the problems that they'd have would go away. And it was not hallucinogenic. Hallucinogenic is where it makes you think things that are happening that aren't. But it was something that helped them to be relieved of the pain. Now, we have hallucinogenic plants here on campus, and they're called the gypsum weed. And the beautiful white trumpet flowers on them. And farmers who have tried to pull it out and let it slide through their hands, next thing you know, they were dancing on top of the roof. And cows usually don't fall into the trap, but cows that have bit into the gypsum weed, I think they can jump off the side of the hill and they can fly, you know. But and they probably could if they would stick with it. But they let themselves think that the weight proportion wasn't looking harmonious. So now think of these things. Think of these things, because these are all part of the magic show that you have available to you. Who created the willow tree to have the bark that was good as an aspirin? Who created that? You did. Yeah? Who created anything that exists? You did. Now, do you know what these things are all used for? We went up to Mount Laguna, and we went a little trek around the ranger's hut up there, and he has little signs all over showing you the tree and how the Indians used it as a medicinal tree, as medicinal purposes. That's quite interesting. Now, we're talking about the stem cells, and the stem cells are ubiquitous within the body of man. They're everywhere in the body of man. We've been told that they're only from the brain, but now science is opening its mind to say that there's more. And pretty soon they'll say every cell on the face of the earth is a stem cell. Now, what about that? When we come to the concept that every cell on the face of the earth is a stem cell, then all we have to do is just say it is done. And then whatever our choice is, it is done. The universal essence is our essence. We have created it to be everywhere. We have not created it only to be aware, only to be there from the brain. We've created it to be there from everywhere, from everything. Now, how can you use it effectively for yourself? How can you use the stem cell to be meaningful in your life? Well, you use the stem cell to be meaningful in your life by putting to work the concept that you are the allness. You are the allness. Then, like Anita and her humorous little anecdote about the two sperm trying to get into the egg at one time to bring about she and her sister, and how they accomplished it and how they did these things. Interesting, you know. Is that how it really happened? Is that really how it happened? And the question sort of begs another answer. It's not. Because she said her mother knew that she was going to have twins. And she was going to... So the evidence was allowed to be there to prove what her mother chose to have. Her mother chose to have that experience. And the body merely opened up to do this. Now, were you there when those two little sperm were jumping into that egg? Did you ever see the egg after the sperm entered the egg? Did the scientists say, well, here's the rest of the egg, you know, it's called the what? What is the placenta? The placenta is where it's attached to the wall and is the feeding part of. But what is the shell itself? The not the embryo, but the
ovary.
The ovary? No, that's earlier in the stage. But it has. I knew all these names a short time ago, but it had all these. The original wasn't there any longer. It was two kids. There were two kids in there, you know, and they were doing their thing, just dancing around inside of their mommy's tummy and saying, hey, Mom, we're having fun in here. No, don't rush, you know. I got a good playmate here, you know, and she looks just like me. You know that, Mom? I mean, you did some interesting things here. It's kind of fun. You think we'll both be the same, just be two peas in a pod? And your mother said, sweetheart, anything I produce is a magical miracle. And I don't produce duplicates. Everything I produce is unique and special, all of its own. Now, that's what her mother said. That's why I like her mother. And she is just a unique woman and a unique creator. Now, did she leave any evidence as to how the sperm cells divided or how that got in there? No, not at all. Not at all. Because there's no way. The placenta is attached to the sac I was always so familiar with those names.
Uterus.
Uterus? No, that's a part of the woman. Yeah. The uterus doesn't come out.
No.
But anyhow, we'll look it up and be aware. But the thing is, it's all that's left of the original game. And it is stretched to encompass you kids, you know. And then, by the time it's done, it is thrown away. And that's why science is trying to grab a hold of those things, because they're filled with what they call embryo stem cells. And they're what's leftovers from what you didn't need. You had so much to give. You were just flowing out everywhere. Now, those are in everybody. Those are what you are created out of. Those are the essence of your foundation. Those are your wholeness and your purity and your goodness. Now, when you discard them is when you say it's not true. When you say that these things are inconsequential, they're not important. And when you say these things, then you disband them, you dispatch them, you release them. Now, what did the little boy in Auntie Mame say about what her brother thought of her? He said, if you can survive her, you can survive anything. But why? Why did her brother do that? Why did her brother have such an attitude about Auntie Mame? Because Auntie Mame was not dependent upon anybody. She was a free spirit. Now, was this little boy a free spirit? Yeah. How could he be born to that man? How was he born to that man?
No, he was born to Aunt Mame.
Well, he came alive with Aunt Mame, yeah. Auntie Mame. But the thing is, you see, we have catalysts in our body. See, this is a catalyst for the atom, causing the atom to give off its energy, this rod. And these rods then are disposed of. And so it is with our bodies. Our bodies have catalysts that cause them to be. And what did we take from the sperm? We took its helix. We took its genetic cell information and made it part of the egg. And then it made it part of the child. And these are all the purity and all the perfection and all the wholeness. These are all the magic that exists. It is so fantastic. Now, why is it that we think that we don't know things? Because we were born backwards. We should have been born the other way around. We should have been born with an adult body, you know, with our aged body, and then gone backwards. Because as a child, we knew everything. We had all knowledge, we had all wisdom, we had all genius, because our stem cells were operating freely. What we didn't have was the vehicle to do what we wanted to do. We didn't have the vehicle of our voice, of our ability to speak and to speak a language that's understandable, goo goo ga ga, you know. And we didn't have eyes to penetrate. We always were looking within. In fact, a long time after we're born, we continue looking within. Not that our eyes are closed, but we see very little on the outer, because we're seeing our reflection from within on the back of our eyes. This is how we are aware of ourselves. It's a magical thing. And then, as we get older, then our parents are telling us that we don't know things, we have to learn things, we have to learn things. And what do I say to you?
You know everything.
What do I say to you?
We reveal it.
We know everything. We reveal what we already know. We reveal it. We don't have to learn it. We reveal it. And because we think we have to learn it, we think we don't know it. And because we think we don't know it, we don't know it. Because we don't know what we think we don't know, because we think we don't know it. That's just the way the principle works. Now, if you think that Rex doesn't mind, he doesn't mind. If you think Rex minds, then he minds. If you think Rex is being funny, then he's being funny. If you think Rex is being naughty, then you tell him, no, Rex, that's not acceptable behavior. Now, this is what children are told as they're growing up. Children, what is the perpetual thing that, about children that is always said about children? They are big know-it-alls. They know it all. They know it all. Now, they don't have the ability to express it as they'd like to, but they know it all. And they really do. But because they cannot express it in the adult terminology, in the adult lexicon, dictionary, what have you, because they can't express it in that way, they are thought to be stupid. Now, don't think you know it all. You got to learn these things. You got to study it in school. You got to become aware of it, you know. And that put down makes the child feel bad. What is the cause of most children's problems in school? What is the problem of most children in school who are having trouble?
They're bored.
I'm sorry?
They're actually bored.
They're bored. They're bored to tears. They know all this stuff. It doesn't challenge them. It doesn't uplift them. It doesn't encourage them to do something. A perfect example of that was when John Dainty was here on campus. He knew all this stuff. He knew all this stuff long before we ever mentioned it. And when he went back home, he worked on his lessons, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And what did he do?
He finished his course.
He did what?
He finished his
course. I'm talking about what he, the kind of work he did.
He wrote his thesis.
Was it any good?
An excellent thesis.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get you to say. His work was excellent. Not because he read the books, which he did, but because he already knew it. And he merely revealed it. And he's been fighting all of his life to reveal it, and everybody's been putting him down and giving him a hard time, and so he's climbing out, and he's climbing out, climbing mountains, trying to get out. But the thing is, he won't make it. He won't make it until he says to himself, hey, I know all these things, I'm comfortable in it, I don't have to prove anything to anybody. And then he just goes and does whatever he does. Because when he tells his stories, he's a master. He's into every consciousness that he has in his story. And he makes those people come alive. Now, he's a magic person. But he is a spoiled brat. Because he was bored to tears going through school. And so education just didn't turn him on. But he's brilliant. If he stops hating school and starts liking himself, he'll be absolutely a genius, which he is. But do you understand me? Yeah, it has nothing to do with it. And if you try to handle him like we try to handle most of our students and require certain things out of him, he'll rebel. Not because we're right, he's wrong, he's right, wrong, we're right, but because that's what he's taught to do all of his life, rebel. He's been a rebel. And his father didn't know how to handle him. His father had no idea what to do with this magnificent genius that was a pain in the neck, you know? And his mother didn't know how to handle him. His brother didn't know how to handle him. Nobody knew how to handle him because he was already a revealed being, but he didn't know that he was a revealed being and could be the revealed being without having to make a big fuss over it. And he'll find it. He'll find it. Maybe Anita is his balancing symbol in his life. Who knows? Maybe not. Maybe he's the balancing symbol for Anita. Because Anita, too, is a big rebel. And you know that. But she is a good rebel. She really applies herself. And she applies herself diligently to learning and being aware of whatever it is she learns. Whether it's sitting on the tractor, driving it in low gear, or whether it's doing the lessons that we give her to do. You know? We are all super fantastic. And what we want to do is to be super fantastic. And how can we be super fantastic? By letting go and letting the divine in us reveal itself. Now, why was I privileged to be with the alchemists? Why was I privileged to be in the psychiatric hospitals in Moscow? and the psychiatric wards of the university there in Moscow and in Leningrad or St. Petersburg. Why? Why was I privileged to be in Munich, in a couple of very special places there that I haven't talked about yet? Why was I privileged to do that? Why was I privileged to know about the clones, the Jewish clones? They have these little, what do we call them? Glomes. Glomes, G-L-O-E-M-S, you know, golems. And why? Why was I privileged to be in the pyramid with Ellen and everybody else, and yet I was there alone? I was there alone talking to some of these beautiful people that had been there and were not there to the physical eye any longer. Why? Did everyone else have the opportunity to, too?
Yes.
And what did they do? They talked their heads off. You say, well, Herb, you probably talked your head off, too. That's right. That's right.
Huh? In a different way.
In a different way. But it's true. And oh, I don't care. You know, why am I privileged to be in Nigeria and be so close to these people in Nigeria who are the shakers of the Nigerian government? Interesting, isn't it? Why is it that I'm sharing with the Nigerians that they are living on a bed of oil and that they have the world's, the eighth largest oil reserve in the world, and they should be a wealthy nation?
Because it's true.
Huh?
Because it's true.
Because it's true. And many other things. Many other places I could go on and think that that merely takes you beyond what you know about me. Now, why is it? Why is it? Because it's fun. It's fun. My stem cells are just having a ball. Because we are unlimited. And wherever I go, whatever I do, I just have a lot of fun. And am I going to live? Am I going to die? Am I going to have a long life here? Am I going to have a short life? Am I going to be here a couple hundred years or a couple minutes? It doesn't matter. I'm ready to enjoy everything. And why limit it? Why cut it short? Why cut it short? I go visit my wife when she's in the process of closing off her life, and I say to her, now, go ahead. Quit. Just because your body feels a little uncomfortable from the pills you're taking, so go ahead, quit. Do you realize that you have a great blessing to give to the world if you want to? She said, what's that? I said, yourself. I said, you are one of the most exceptional women on earth. If you'll wake up to the fact that that's who you are and stop trying to live in someone else's showcase, you know. What showcase is she trying to live in? She's looking for something to believe in. She studied our philosophy. She studied this. She had me around her for a while, you know. And all of these things were part of her life. But you watch. If she chooses to let go of feeling sorry for herself, that life's not going the way she wants it, when she lets go, then the great catalyst will be there to enthrone her in the magic that she is. You too. You too are ready to have yourselves enthroned in the magic that you are. Because your stem cells are what? Unlimited. Your stem cells, you don't need a lot of them, but you got a lot of them. You don't. How many cells are there on the tip of your little finger, remember?
Yes.
We talked 10 to the 10th billionth. Yeah. Cells, and cells are made up of what?
Atoms.
So how many atoms are on the tip of your finger? Wow, you know? And what does one atom do? It lights a city for a year. So, just imagine, you have enough power in you to light the city for a year, plus. But you don't believe it. You don't respect it. You don't say, This is my energy body. I love you, I love you, I love you, energy body. You're so fantastic. I choose to have the human form right now. Maybe on some other dimension of experience, I have a different type of form. But I love you, I love it. Love it. And when you do, you're causing not only the atoms to come alive, you're causing the, what? The stem cells to jump for joy in every area of your body. Yeah, go up here and get a scoop of stem cells. Okay, I'm giving myself a massage and stem cells, you know, from my brain, from my 10,000 stem cells, a massage of my whole body. You say, Herb, that is so silly. Yeah, silly like a fox. Yeah. You go ahead, be silly like a fox. Play that game and see what sort of wonderment happens to you. See what sort of things take place in your life. And you'll be absolutely amazed at what takes place. You know, the time goes by so quickly, doesn't it?
Yes,
ma'am. And it's just a few minutes before Ingeborg and I have our spot of tea. But we'll go on with these things. I have brought you into all of these realms here. Using many stem cells was once necessary, now it's not. As an atom, so tiny yet so precious, the single cell is now being cautiously, gently loved. So tomorrow will be our fifth day of our seminar, and lecture 13 will come with mental, spiritual use of stem cells. Lecture 14, stem cells used with or without thought. And 15, stem cells come wrapped in one covering. And I would like one of you to look up the name of the birth gadgets for the body. The placentia and all that other little stuff, you know. And present it to us at supper time, okay? So anyone can take that as a little challenge if you like.
You want to do that?
What's that?
I said, well, he said anybody. Yeah, but he said anyone
else. Any one of you has access to the dictionary and to the internet and everything, you know. And go on WikiUpa. I'm sorry? What?
I do it too.
You what?
Among all of us, I will look into it too.
You will join in doing it also.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Yeah. And the more of you that do it, the more of you that have this wonderful privilege of entering into that world, because the words will lead you to other words, to other words, and before you know it, you will become an obstetrician. Okay, I love you. And see you for supper.